Welcome to Talking Trash, our waste reduction podcast, brought to you by the City of Spokane Solid Waste Department.
Hello out there. Thank you for tuning in. I am Gina Clays, your podcast host, and I am the Recycling Outreach Assistant for the City of Spokane Solid Waste Department. So our third episode profiles an individual who has taken her interest in solid waste and renewable energy to a new level with starting her own company, Biomethane LLC. Kathleen Kinney is originally from Bellevue, Washington, and then obtained her education and worked in a variety of positions in the sustainability field prior to starting her business. She is also a professional harp player and happens to be one of my roommates. Thank you for joining us today, Kathleen.
Thanks, Gina, for having me.
Great. And tell us a little bit about your background. How did you first become interested in environmental issues?
Well, I couldn't tell you exactly when. I know it was from a young age that I became interested in environmental issues, but I remember particularly in my senior year of high school when I was living in Bellevue, and our school cafeteria was using styrofoam trays. And I was somewhat horrified because the city of Bellevue offered compost and instead everything was going into the trash. So I remember I started asking questions and I was a bit ahead of my time. They kept telling me, go talk to so-and-so down the hall, probably to get me to go away. But by the end of the year, I'd calculated that switching to compostable trays would cost a total of $4,000 per year. So you call that my first, if not very sophisticated, feasibility study.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. And so it sounds like after you had your influence on that group, it sounds like they did a lot after you graduated.
Yeah, there was a group of students that got together after I had moved on from the high school and started a sustainability club and ended up introducing compostable trays. So it was really great to see that happen. I don't know, I might have had an influence on that. But yeah, following that, I went to major in environmental science at Western Washington University in Bellingham. And same thing there. When I found out they were not composting in one of the cafeterias, I got on their case, started asking some questions until that changed. And and then started asking, well, while we're at it, why don't we start heating some of our buildings on campus with the food waste from the dining halls? Mm-hmm. At some point along the way, I'd found out that you could use something called an anaerobic digester or biodigester to turn food waste into compost and energy. But again, I was ahead of my time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So could you tell us a little bit more about anaerobic digestion and what that whole process is?
Right. So an anaerobic digester is an enclosed tank, and biodegradation happens inside of that tank in the absence of oxygen. So it encourages the right kind of bacteria. It's all very nasty stuff. It's very fun. And you can put all kinds of wet organic waste into it, whether that's food scraps, cow manure, sewage, and you get biogas out. And that biogas contains about 60% methane, or what's called renewable natural gas. And because it's an enclosed environment, you're able to capture that and use it for energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That's great. And so you said that when you were a student at Western Washington, you called up digester companies and tried to get that happening.
Yeah. So in my spare time, yeah, when I wasn't doing homework or partying or whatever I was doing, I was calling up companies that made these digesters, and they would laugh at me and they said, we don't make them small enough for the university. And of course, now that's changed. The technology has developed. I don't think I could take too much credit for that one, though.
Mm-hmm. And you had a professor that you met that was pretty influential.
Right. So it was at that point I was running around poking in the back recesses of the campus, touring the steam plant and all that kind of stuff. And that's when I ran into this professor called Eric Lenhart, and his department was in the engineering building. And he was actually working with this dairy farm in Linden, north of campus. And on that dairy farm, there was a digester, a concrete tank about the size of a football field. And he was actually coaching students to build race cars that could run off of this renewable natural gas. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, this is really cool. We could actually, for less than the cost of diesel, we could sell vehicle fuel to trucking companies, to other vehicle fleets. And it would actually have a net negative carbon impact. So that really inspired me, mm-hmm. that you could be driving a vehicle and essentially preventing emissions from going out into the atmosphere.
Yeah. And could you just define a little bit what the net negative carbon impact means exactly?
Yeah. So this is something that it can be tricky for folks to wrap their heads around. But people have heard of global warming potential. In fact, that carbon dioxide has this global warming effect. And methane, which is that energy-containing molecule in biogas, and it gets released if you have, say, dairy manure that isn't in an enclosed space. Well, that methane is between 25 and 85 times more powerful of a global warming molecule than carbon dioxide, and that depends over what time scale you're measuring it. Mm-hmm. So it's 25 to 85 times more effective at trapping heat.
Yeah. And so that has to do with methane. It has to do with kind of like the chemical structure of the molecule.
Yeah, I've heard it described as the molecule. It's almost like it's attached to the different pieces of it, like by slinkies. And mm-hmm. the way that those slinkies vibrate is going to be effective at capturing a certain spectrum of heat energy. Mm-hmm. And it captures a different spectrum of heat energy than a carbon dioxide molecule. So even though there's less of it in the atmosphere, if you were to put a certain amount into the atmosphere, it would do a lot more heat trapping.
I see. So methane is the bad stuff. We want to get rid of that. And so it sounds like with this digester, it can trap it instead of just releasing it straight into the atmosphere.
Exactly. So that's the idea. And if you can capture it and burn it in the place of a fossil fuel like diesel, number one, it's like taking 85 carbon dioxide molecules out of the atmosphere and only putting out one in its place.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, folks have generally heard of carbon sequestration, where you're kind of capturing carbon dioxide on a one-for-one basis. But when you're capturing methane, you're now capturing a molecule that's 85 times worse than carbon dioxide.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that's good. And okay, so you captured this methane, you've trapped it, and then what happens next? Like, how does it get transported or get, you know, how do we then use the natural gas in our homes?
Yeah, so most everyone's familiar with natural gas. You use it on a regular basis for heating, for cooking, and there's a very extensive pipeline network that transports that natural gas to your home. Most of what we use, in fact, all of what we use in this region, is conventional natural gas from fossil sources. So it's coming from oil fields, it's coming from fracking sites. It's as much a fossil fuel as oil or, you know, petroleum. But when you clean up, instead you're able to clean up the biogas that's coming out of a digester and isolate the methane. Now that's chemically identical to the natural gas in those pipelines. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I mean, you can use it on site for heat or electricity. You can fuel vehicles with it, or you can inject it into the pipeline once you meet certain purity standards.
Okay. So what are some of the main sources of renewable natural gas? I know you mentioned the dairy farm and the manure. What are some of the other sources?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the four major sources, manure, and then your sewage, as well as landfills and food waste.
Okay. So I think we're going to kind of segue into some of those other sources a little bit later. But so let's just get back to where you were. So you were involved at Western Washington University in the student group. And so what kind of came next in the whole process?
Right. So here I was, I became the student lead on this digester project. I was out there plumbing together the gas purification technology that we were building as a student team. And at some point along the way, I realized I need to get a business degree. I need to know what it was going to take to not just build the technology, but to actually show people and make the case to people that this is something that they could use just as easily as they were using fossil fuels, and that they could really do something powerful for the environment at the same time. So the idea of both saving money and saving the environment, and that those two could go together. Mm-hmm. So I went on to get my MBA in sustainable systems at the Bainbridge Graduate Institute over in Bainbridge Island. Mm-hmm. And I was working at the dairy farm while going through grad school. And from there, I got some other business students together. I was actually trying to start my business at that time. So the business that I run now, I've actually started it twice. First was during grad school. They call it a practice run. And then the second time after I moved to Spokane, there were lots of people that said, go get a real job. So I did for a few years before coming back to really that first love, the project of working on digestion and carbon negative transportation. And then officially I started my business that I run now in the summer of 2018.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think it's cool what you said about how the first time you tried to start your business, you sort of had a different idea when you first started, and then you kind of rebranded yourself. Could you tell us some more about your business and like what kinds of clients you have and the kinds of projects that you do?
Yeah, well, I would say the first time I tried to start it, I was trying to do way too many things at once. I was trying to be a technology company at the same time as being able to work with trucking companies so that they could adopt the fuel. So we were really trying to span the whole value chain. And when I moved out to Spokane, I realized, well, at this point, a lot of the technology has been developed. There's not really reason to reinvent the wheel. So I rebranded myself as a consulting firm that would be able to draw together all the different pieces of the project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. It's great to have that ability to adapt, to keep your business relevant and successful.
And another part of it is that I was no longer surrounded by dairy farms, but we definitely have municipal wastewater here. So that became really my goal, was to, starting in Spokane, see if we could get as much of our biological organic waste to produce renewable natural gas and see that forward, and then be able to do that across the state and the country.
Yeah. So you mentioned you do feasibility studies, and then you work with municipalities usually?
That's correct. Yeah. So what I do is it's a feasibility study or feasibility analysis, kind of like with the styrofoam trays back in high school. And essentially what it is, I figure out how much is the project going to cost, how much is it going to save, and what does that look like compared to the status quo or maybe the other options that my clients are looking at. And I work with municipalities. So I come in and give them guidance on whether it'd be a good idea to go forward with a project and how. There's often a lot of kind of creative workarounds and things that can be combined to make a project work that otherwise wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. So it's really, is that project going to make money? Is it going to be not only self-sustaining, but truly start to pay revenue to that city over time.
Mm-hmm. And then once you've, you've kind of done the feasibility analysis, and then once, say that they've decided, okay, I think I want to go ahead with this project, do you then work with them to implement the project?
And that's the idea, but I also learned that implementation it's really a whole other kettle of fish. I originally had the idea that once you do a feasibility study, you show it's profitable, that it would automatically go forward, but there are definitely a lot more pieces to it. you were talking about major infrastructure. So not just a single dairy, but a citywide sewer system and wastewater plant. And you have to really know what you're doing so that whatever you recommend is going to allow that operation to keep working in the way it's supposed to keep working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one of the projects I know that you mentioned was working with the county and the wastewater treatment plant. Could you talk a little bit more about that project?
Yeah, that was my first project. So starting back in 2018. And you may or may not know, there's two different wastewater treatment plants in town. There is the city's wastewater treatment plant, which is, I'm going to say 24 million gallons per day. And then the county, which is about 8 million gallons per day. And they're actually the most receptive at the time. So I was able to work with them to put together the numbers on what a project would look like there. So I was talking with Avista, all the different folks that would need to be involved. Mm-hmm. And they actually have, as a newer plant, they've got a pretty interesting system in place already. So they are taking the biogas. They have digesters in place, both of the plants in town. The county has two digesters, and they take the biogas that comes off of those, and they run it through a set of microturbines. And the microturbines can produce both heat, which is then used to keep the digester warm, as well as some electricity. And they actually use 90% of the gas that way. The city, on the other hand, which has a lot higher gas production, they do use that in part for heat in boilers to heat the digesters. But during the summer months, a lot of it is flared. So over the course of the year, you might see about half of the gas at the city plant getting flared.
Mm-hmm. And what exactly does it mean to flare?
So to flare is when you take that methane and you burn it off so that you're turning it into carbon dioxide. That way it has less of an impact on the environment. But in the course of burning it off, you're not exactly getting usable energy out of it.
Mm-hmm. And why don't they turn it all into usable energy?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I know that there are folks at the city who have definitely been wanting to do something more with the gas stream. But truly, it's an investment of time and monetary resources to try to get a project like that going. So that's really where I come in as a business, is to try to smooth over those obstacles. And when it takes a lot of equipment and capital costs to be able to clean up the gas, as well as to inject it into the natural gas pipeline. And there are also a lot of steps that have to happen. You have to have all the stakeholders on board and to make sure it's, you know, a project that we can actually do. So that's a lot of hurdles to get through for the average municipality, and especially when your focus is really to just make sure you're putting clean water back into the river. So it's not necessarily the top priority to fully use your biogas, even if it could be making money.
Mm-hmm. So kind of part of what you're doing is trying to show that you can have both. You can have sustainability and make some money too. And you will benefit in the long run from putting these measures into place, right?
That really is the key. Yeah. And there is usually an initial investment on these projects. But the idea is that you're going to be making that money back and then some over time. Mm-hmm. And so it's really, yeah, it's taking a look at what kinds of sustainability measures can the city put in place that are going to end up bringing in revenue. And it's not something that people think of every day. It's often the idea is that you have to put some sacrifices in place to do something well for the environment. But it's really, you know, can we make those initial sacrifices as minimal as possible, mm-hmm. so that we can start saving and have that be right alongside doing something good for the environment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you have some initial investment to put in, but in the long run, it will pay off.
That's the idea. And I would say, especially this year with COVID, it's been a huge challenge for municipalities. They're often already tight on budget, but this year they've had to cut budgets immensely. So there's really nothing extra to go around for projects like this. And that's why at this point, my business is really looking into, can we get rid of that upfront cost altogether? There are business models out there that allow municipalities to do that. So it's really trying to bring that into the space and see if we can do that here with the city of Spokane.
Mm-hmm. That sounds great. And then so tying into solid waste management, how I know that this is related because another one of the sources that you mentioned other than dairy farms and the manure was green waste, like food scraps. We used green waste and organics kind of interchangeably. It's consists of any kind of like food scraps or yard waste. And so how does that tie in to this whole into like your company and keeping things out of the waste stream?
Absolutely. I'm glad you asked that. So green waste, organic waste, it's sometimes people think of green waste as just your yard clippings, maybe branches, that kind of thing. What we'd be looking at for anaerobic digestion is, however, really the wet waste. And people may not know that there's about of all the waste that goes into our waste to energy plant, we have about 33% of that, about a third of that is actually food waste and some of that other wet organic waste. And Spokane is kind of a special case because we have a waste energy plant instead of a landfill. Back several years ago, we realized that our landfills were leaching into the aquifer. So we ended up building a waste energy plant that's one of a few in the country. And that was very helpful because that meant we didn't have to transport waste to a landfill across the state. And it does have a lot of benefit in that sense. But when it comes to your wet organics, like food waste, you can't get a lot of energy out of food waste in an incinerator. It takes about as much energy to dry the food as it would create.
Mm-hmm. And when you put the food waste into a landfill, it just rots and produces methane. And you said that there are other projects that can flare or capture that gas, but it's not as efficient as a digester. And why was that again?
Right. So landfills, as we mentioned earlier, they are a source of renewable natural gas, but you're not talking about really an enclosed tank in an easily controlled environment at that point. So they're burping methane all over the place, but it tends to be more difficult to capture and at a lower purity once it is captured. Mm-hmm. So at the same time as they're relatively easy to tap for renewable natural gas, and there are a number of projects across the state that do so, it's certainly not ideal when it comes to capturing that methane, because you're also causing a lot of leakage. So there's been a huge regulatory push, realizing that this is a big issue for climate change, where several states, California in particular, and Washington is, I would say, in the early stages of requiring food waste to be diverted from landfill. Mm-hmm. And to be put instead towards compost or anaerobic digestion. And the fantastic thing about that is, I mean, once you can, in fact, divert that and put it through anaerobic digestion, now you're creating a much more efficient way of capturing that methane.
Yeah, and then you said that you can also compost it after. You cannot compost the green waste after it's been anaerobically digested, correct?
Absolutely, yes. And you'll actually notice that they do compost even what comes out of the digesters at our wastewater plants. And there's a portion of that that is mixed in with compost that is made at Bartec. So they take a percentage of that matter and come out with two different kinds of compost, one that contains wastewater biosolids and one that doesn't. And you would have to use the one that doesn't for organic farming. But people use both and it seems to work pretty well. So when it comes to using food waste, now you're talking about something that is going to be relatively low in contamination and would make for a great additive to compost.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, definitely a part of food waste reduction is simply reducing the amount of food that is wasted. So there's definitely that aspect of it. But as far as the rest of the, there's always going to be food waste that's generated. So it's good to put that to a better use. So it sounds like using an anaerobic digester is the best way to get energy out of it as opposed to the waste to energy facility.
I really like to be clear with people that the idea is first to divert edible food waste because of the 1/3 organic waste going into our incinerator. Approximately half of that is actually edible. So I'm very excited. There are a couple of folks that I'm in touch with that are working on making food waste and excess food very easy to divert and get over to the organizations that can distribute it back to people in need and put that to its best use. But then there's the other half of that, which is inedible, and that would make a very good feedstock for a digester, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's a good point, what you said about, wet organic waste doesn't burn very well, so you do have to create more energy to incinerate it, and that doesn't really make up for the amount of energy that it produces. So
yeah.
So it sounds like the anaerobic digester is better set up for getting energy out of wet green waste.
Absolutely. So incinerators are made for dry waste. Anaerobic digesters are made for wet waste. And moreover, you're only getting ash coming out of an incinerator. Mm-hmm. So whatever you put in there, about 1/3 of it comes out as ash, which is a lot to still have to haul across the state. Whereas with a digester, you'd be able to turn that into compost instead and recycle it right there.
Right. And just keep it super local.
Absolutely.
That's good. And so you had mentioned to me that you're working on a project to get a digester set up at the waste to energy facility. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes, I am. So that project was conceptualized last summer, and we actually got a great amount of support from both the waste to energy staff and city public works staff to be able to divert that stream of wet food waste that's coming into the incinerator, and especially to try to do as much source separation as possible. So really working with some of our institutions in town to separate that food waste out at the source, and again, putting as much back into the edible food waste stream as we can, and then having this really clean feedstock coming into a digester from the rest. And not just looking within the city of Spokane, but also about 20 miles surrounding the city. So looking at partners, perhaps including Airway Heights Municipal Wastewater Plant, which currently does not have a digester, and a few other entities out there, and to be able to combine all that. So you have a really sizable project, and the larger the project, the more financially feasible it usually is.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned combining the food waste with a wastewater treatment plant sewage. And why would you want to combine it like that?
Oh, yes. This gets into the biology, which is fun. but you can either digest your food waste and your sewage separately, or you can get even more gas, more than the sum of its parts when you combine them, because you're essentially giving the bacteria that break it down, you're giving them a really nice stable feedstock with the sewage, and then you're giving them a huge energy spike with the food waste. And together that makes just this great, like, nutrient dense soup for them.
Mm-hmm. It sounds kind of like with compost, the whole concept of combining browns and greens for carbon and nitrogen. It seems like that's really optimal for the bacteria.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. And so where are you at with the process of getting that whole project set up with a digester at the waste to energy facility or somewhere else?
Mm-hmm. So we applied for an EPA grant for that last July, and we found out in November that we didn't get the funding. So we're still looking at ways to move that project forward, because if you've got a project and you've got stakeholders that are excited about it, especially if you're me, you don't just want to let that opportunity slip by. We did find out that there is a team at WSU that was funded for a similar proposal where they were going to find 3 different sites around the state and then do a high level look at those sites to kind of vet out the potential to make renewable natural gas and to be able to pull together some of the stakeholders. So we've been talking with them, myself and Mike Peterson at the Lands Council, and there is a good possibility that we could work with them and actually have them help to bring together those stakeholders here in Spokane and move that forward.
Yeah, that sounds great. And I think it's interesting to note that, you know, even though it might sound like your business is more of like a technical type of business, it sounds like so much of it is working with people and building relationships. So it sounds like those are important skills to have for starting this type of business.
Absolutely. And it is, it's both worlds. The technical side's got to be down, but then there's so much of it which has to do with relationships and being able to really understand where people are at, what is it that they need, what's going to make their job easier.
Yeah, definitely. And so what is the, so I know with the waste to energy facility, it powers enough electricity for about 13,000 homes per year. And I was wondering, kind of, have you looked at that with having this, the digester at the waste to energy facility, and like what the additional energy output could be by adding that?
Okay, so I was excited because when you brought this topic up earlier, I had to look this up. So if we were to look at just the inedible food waste that's going into the waste energy plant right now, which, if I'm getting my data correct, is about 53,000 tons per year. That's a whole bunch of food waste. That would put out biogas of about 170 million cubic feet per year. And again, this is all very rough estimates because we're not sure how much energy content there is per ton. But that's going to be 300 cubic feet per minute, which is about double what is produced currently at the Spokane County wastewater plant. So that's a pretty sizable project. Of course, that number is going to really depend on how much of that food waste can you actually divert, and divert in such a way that it's clean of contamination. As well as, of course, we're hoping to bring in other partners, people that are not currently delivering their waste to the incinerator plant, but like the Airway Heights Municipal Wastewater Plant might have a source that's untapped currently. So I would really love to see that figure go up.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you'll get more into the nitty gritty numbers whenever you do the official feasibility study.
Absolutely.
That's great. And so getting into where renewable natural gas fits into the big picture of renewable energy, how does it compare to other renewable energy sources like, you know, wind and solar, the big ones that people always talk about?
Great question. And when most people think renewable energy, they think wind and solar. And there's kind of a conception that those should be able to solve all of our problems. But there's I would say key limitation with each of those, and that is that they are intermittent. So the electric utility companies have a really large challenge ahead with trying to integrate those renewable energy sources into the grid. And it's it would be hard to overestimate how much of a challenge this could be. Because essentially you're trying to be able to store that energy until people need it. And this is not only on a daily basis that you have fluctuations in those sources, but also on a yearly basis. So being able to make up for our usage of fossil natural gas during the winter for heating is going to be a challenge. especially being able to fuel several industrial uses of natural gas is going to be a very big challenge to do with electricity, as well as large vehicles. Those are the hardest to electrify. So really looking at some of those things, it becomes important to have something that can displace natural gas. And another thing that people don't often realize is that about 30 or 35% of our electricity mix here in Spokane is from fossil natural gas. And the huge advantage is that it's essentially available when you need it, and it can be used as a backup for more intermittent sources. Mm-hmm. So it can really play a key role there.
Yeah. And so you were saying that battery storage can be highly expensive, and plus the materials in batteries can cause pollution when they are mined. And so, like, so how do, what is our current storage system for renewable or just for natural gas?
Yeah, battery storage would be, I would say, what most people would think of as the solution to making wind and solar available at any time, but it is highly expensive. In general, it'd be much more expensive to put in a battery than to simply draw more power from our regional power system, which is why you don't see a lot of battery storage in the region. And definitely the materials do require mining, often in environmentally sensitive areas or in countries with maybe a little less political stability than we'd like. So, and besides that, battery storage works on a relatively short time frame. We're talking a matter of days, usually, is when you want to be able to use that energy, and it's going to come at a slight loss of efficiency. When it comes to natural gas, there's actually a quite developed storage system that's designed to work across seasons. So storing natural gas that's produced throughout the year so that it's available during winter when we need it. And that actually consists of not just the pipelines that are able to store it to some extent, but also large underground caverns. And we have a couple of those in the Northwest U.S., and those play a really key role in making sure that that fuel is available when we need it. And that's a long-term storage. That's something that could actually be utilized if we were to produce more renewable natural gas.
Mm-hmm. So there's sort of an existing infrastructure that with renewable natural gas, we could just tap into that.
Right.
Yeah. And so what would be some advantages other than the environmental benefits? What would be some other advantages of using renewable natural gas, like perhaps it being more local?
Absolutely. And I would say that there's one glaring flaw in the natural gas distribution system is that you do have pipeline leaks. It's somewhat debated. Is it more than we've thought? Is it less than we've thought? But the idea when you can tap into renewable natural gas in your own community, even if on paper you might show that you're selling that natural gas to, say, a bus fleet in Florida, in actuality, those molecules are being used locally. And what that means is you're not having to transport that gas from, say, Canada or the Dakotas. You're not having to transport it across state lines. And I would really love to see as much as possible, the majority of our natural gas infrastructure be able to be localized in that way. And that's perhaps a far off dream, but I think we could really start to see that, and we could start to do that here in Spokane.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And then are there any other, so I know Avista uses other than natural gas and hydroelectric power. I know Avista has some other sources of power that they use locally. Are there any other kind of technologies for like sources for energy that we haven't mentioned yet that you think are worth mentioning?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were looking at the Avista pie chart of electricity sources earlier, and there's a large proportion of that that's hydropower. But that portion is going to be essentially very difficult to grow. And in fact, the idea is let's try to remove dams to improve the fish ecosystems. But there's also We're looking at 2% biomass, and I believe that is referring to the Kettle Falls facility, which uses wood waste as a way to produce electricity. But there's also something that I think could be very promising, and that's gasification. And the best use for gasification would be to address things like forestry slash. And it's really important that we're looking at the forestry slash, which is essentially the debris, branches, et cetera, that would contribute to forest fires if they were left untouched, and to instead be able to go into the field and, I would say, burn them in a low oxygen environment is essentially what gasification is. And when you do that, you turn that woody matter into something called biochar. This is something that the Lands Council in town is working on pretty in depth. And the idea being to actually have native peoples from, say, the Colville region be able to build these kilns that you could then use to gasify forestry slash. So you can make biochar from it. It can be a challenge to capture the energy, but once you've created this biochar, it's actually a very stable form of carbon sequestration. And you can put that back into your forest soils. You can put that on agricultural lands, and it's going to work to hold water in place, hold fertilizer. And really that could become a cycle that helps to lessen our drought season and lessen our wildfire season. So that would be a really great way to reduce carbon dioxide emissions on both ends. And then there's another, I would say, somewhat futuristic use and application with renewable natural gas, but it's essentially a means of taking renewable energy like wind and solar, using that to split water, and being able to essentially store that wind and solar energy in the form of renewable natural gas, and then to be able to use that later. And the economics of that are still some ways off. So we might not see it tomorrow, but I do believe that that's going to be a very interesting and very important development for a fully renewable energy future. And yeah. I might note that Elon Musk with SpaceX, if I understand his plan correctly, he's sending rockets to Mars. But once on Mars, he's going to use solar energy to actually split elements and create renewable natural gas to fuel the return flights. So it'll be very interesting to see how that happens. And I hope we can do it just here on the surface of the earth as well.
Yeah, that's exciting to think about the future of sourcing energy, and just, you know, we'll have to get more creative. That's for sure.
And we will.
And are there any other resources that you'd recommend for those wanting to learn more? And, you know, what are different ways if people want to get more involved locally? What do you recommend for that?
Yes. So some sources for learning more about renewable natural gas in general and kind of where it's at in the U.S. And will you be able to share links in the...
Facebook post or something.
So a couple I'd recommend are the American Biogas Council, and that's really, I would say, kind of a unbiased industry information source, and it kind of shows what's going on, what's possible here. There's a lot more going on in Europe than in the US, but that's a good way to find out more what is US specific. Another one is the Coalition for Renewable Natural Gas, and that has some really great resources, like a updated map of all the different renewable natural gas projects in the U.S. that is, you know, growing regularly. So I'll definitely send you those links over. And I would also say definitely get to know your solid waste department. Get educated about where your waste goes, learn about the waste energy plant, pay attention when you go to maybe dump some trash the next time. And definitely take a look at what Gina's been doing. I think you've been doing a great job with educating folks about where your trash and where your recycling goes. So get acquainted with your local system. And then lastly, there's a website that is all about local businesses and what they're doing. And that's the Live Local INW website. And at that website, I've got a page on what my business is doing, and you can actually go there and buy what I call plops. I obviously take myself way too seriously, but this is a way that I'm actually crowdfunding to help move that project that I spoke about forward, where we could collect organic waste locally and make RNG happen here.
That's exciting. I will for sure be buying some plops, and I look forward to contributing to renewable natural gas in this area.
Yes. Thank you, Gina.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It's been great talking with you, Kaplan, and we look forward to talking to you again someday.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Take care. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Talking Trash, a waste reduction podcast put on by the City of Spokane Solid Waste Department. For more information, go to our website at my.spokanecity.org.